I'd like to welcome you here to our first podcast in the series, Building Leadership. This is Maura Cassidy, and I'm inviting all you Rosemont parents to join me in this podcast. The topic is helping your daughter deal with challenges and disappointments. And I suppose the first thing I was thinking of in this regard was challenges and disappointments of our teens. Are really parents' huge disappointments and challenges, because the truth is, as parents, you will experience them in a very deep way, because it's your daughter who's experienced that challenge or that disappointment. And I know at the outset, a lot of parents have often commented they wish they had sort of acknowledged their own space first before dealing with their daughter's challenge and disappointment. In the sense they wish they had asked themselves the question, well, how am I feeling about this? And it's not sure as a parent that I'm suffering, but it's not about me, it's about how to help my daughter to deal with what's in front of her. I don't know if you've seen the film Finding Nemo recently, but recently I had the opportunity to see a clip in it. And what's very striking in it is the human story. And they say that's why the film itself was such a box office hit. Because, of course, you have the father, Marlin, who's a typical overprotective parent who wants to keep little Nemo safe. And Nemo, on the opposite, he's very content expecting his father to fight life's battles for him. And so he doesn't even try. And that famous scene where Marlin says, "Now, what's the one thing that we have to remember about the ocean?" And Nemo's response, "Well, that it's not safe." And Marlin, "That's my boy." And I think that's it's such a scene that we can all relate to. As educators or parents, we'll want to do whatever is necessary to make our teens feel safe, secure, and as happy as possible. And we don't want to see them in pain or distress. We don't want to see the pain of disappointment or the pain sometimes of what we might consider too great a challenge. And if we're parents of a daughter who's living with disability, well, obviously that's another dimension to all of this. And as adults, our natural response is to remove as many uncomfortable and unhappy situations from our teenagers' paths. So as far as we can see it, they will be better able to enjoy life in spite of and without, you might say, fears or anxieties. There is a new word, or maybe it's not that new, but that I came across recently for a new style of parenting, and it's called lawnmower parenting. So it's not the helicopter parent anymore, it's the lawnmower parenting. I suppose the image is quite helpful. It's the idea of a parent who wants to mow down all the obstacles, any experiences of discomfort or challenge in their teen's life, which, as we know, isn't helpful. Because science and education experience, and your own experience, I'm sure, of parenting, has shown that we do our teens a huge disservice by doing that, because what we're essentially doing is protecting them from life. And sometime they will have to face life and we won't be there with them in that moment. But what our job is at these years is to help them to step into the space of challenge, to step into the space of disappointment, and to grow as a result. And while we all make mistakes, you know, because none of us parents and educators, none of us are Superman, none of us are Superwoman, knowledge and understanding of how to build leadership in teens is a wonderful thing. You know, we've often heard the phrase "forewarned is forearmed," and really, that's such a helpful idea to have at the back of our mind. And that's why I wanted to look at in this podcast, to look at the idea of what's the difference between enabling fear, because ultimately challenges or disappointments, there's a fear in there. There's a fear of what does this say about me? The fear of what's this failure has defined me. Whereas, of course, that's not the case, but that fear can be paralyzing, or the anxiety there. And what we're really trying to do is build leadership in our teens. And knowing how to stop enabling, you know, that fear or that anxiety in our teens, and how to build leadership instead. So I suppose, what's the difference between enabling fear in our teens of disappointment or fear of challenge? What we're really doing there is we're giving power to fear and anxiety. We're telling our teens that their fears and anxiety are the last word, whereas in fact, they're only the starting block. They're the beginning. Because if we don't challenge, you might say, their attitude to fear and anxiety, what we're really doing is giving them permission to let fear and anxiety control their lives. And any parenting decision, it is easier for our teens to come down on the path of fear and avoidance. Well, that's a parenting decision that's enabling. You know, when we decide that, look, something that enables our teens to go, I'm not going to do this, I'm fearful of the other, and we enable that, well, we're just helping them let fear become more embedded in their lives. And while that style of parenting or educating, you know, the style of enabling fear, often soothes our teens and it gives them a sense of safety and security, it's very short-lived. It does give them short-term comforts, but ultimately it's self-limiting, because what we're doing really there is we're limiting their growth and their capabilities long-term. We're saying to them, be limited by what you fear. And as a result, the space of fear occupies in their imagination and life, as I said, has been given permission to grow and expand. And their space for growth becomes smaller and smaller all the time. Whereas building leadership, on the other hand, teaches our teens that we see, we hear their fears, we're not denying them, we're not putting them on the carpet. We accept them for now, but we're committing to work with them, to overcome them, to outrun them, and that we're here to do this together. So in building leadership, in contrast, is about teaching them resilience, teaching them coping strategies, teaching them ultimately the sense of being confident and independent. And as educators and parents, we will no doubt have noted that all our teens, no matter what their abilities, physical, psychological, emotional, they will try to get what they want and avoid situations or tasks that they dislike. And you might say, well, that's called human nature. And it is, because we as adults do exactly the same. We avoid discomfort. And while we don't need science to tell us that is the case, the science would support that position. And again, I suppose here is our teens, we need to make the decisions to help them to be confident and independent. And that's a decision, as you know, you might have heard, that we have to make before. You may say it's an a priori decision. In other words, it's like the decision one makes if one wants to go on a diet. Well, the decision is made in Tesco. Will I put that into the trolley or not? So our decision to be, you might say, parents and educators who are building leadership, we need to make those decisions before we need to act it out, before the situation. We can't leave it to the last moment when our teen pushes us to the pin of our collar. We need to know already, as we know very well, we need to know what we want to do before the tough love happens, because then we have to stick to our good parenting without compromises. And it's always good to, at the back of all this, to bear in mind that we can't make our teens happier. You know, they need to do that. And happiness isn't like a birthday present, you know, that arrives miraculously, you know, if a series of events are lined up. Happiness is a consequence of decisions and actions, which, if made consistently, as we know, over time, lead to happiness. So it's an inside job, as I frequently said in these podcasts, and each person needs to want it and to act accordingly. Our teen needs to want happiness and to act accordingly. We cannot give it to them. We can merely point them in the right direction. We can merely facilitate their choosing it in their daily decisions and actions. And we need to give them lots and lots of reasons. And that's something, you know, we sometimes have to second guess ourselves on, because our teens can sometimes appear extremely bright, quicker than we are at answering, you know, at times very challenging. We can tend to presume they have the ability, you know, that mental sort of strength or that mental ability sort of to foresee, which they don't have. And I think it's always helpful to refer back to the book by Frances Jensen on the teenage brain. And she reminds us in a very interesting quote, just how undeveloped the teenage brain is, and not to take this for granted. She says the last bits of the brain to connect are the frontal and prefrontal cortices, where insight, empathy and risk taking are controlled. This means that very smart adolescents will do very stupid things in a very impulsive way. And I don't think organisation is a high priority for most teenagers. They have other things to worry about. They're messy because they don't give themselves enough time to tidy up before they run off to do something else. And I think that's interesting. They don't give themselves enough time. They don't foresee. And why is all that so relevant? Well, they don't necessarily have reasons for their impulsive behavior. They just do it. So we think we're stating the obvious. Well, it's not necessarily obvious to them because we, as we've seen, the frontal and the prefrontal cortices are the last parts of the brain to actually develop. And some psychologists say they don't develop until the age of 20 or 21. So there's quite a bit of time there and development to take place. So as parents and educators, we know that happiness doesn't follow on from giving in, but in helping our teens to choose well. And happiness doesn't just happen because we want it. It comes when we build leadership in our teens and we don't hand it on a plate. So I suppose it's good for us to bear in mind that, which we know very well, but it's no harm to remind ourselves that parenting any teen is never black and white. There's always a grey area. And the reality is that each educator, each parent needs to pick the battles. Because those battles, whatever challenge our teen is experiencing, whatever disappointment they're experiencing, be it academic, social, or just the current circumstances that we're all living through, well, they're different. For example, for some, a teen's lack of sleep may make the entire day feel like you have to walk on eggshells. I think just a little side point to make here, which we sometimes forget, is that teenagers need an awful lot more sleep than adults do. And again, Frances Jensen reminds us of this. She says, from puberty to the end of the teens, the circadian clock is all actually programming them to go to sleep and wake up around 3 to 4 hours later than adults. And this is a problem as they're relatively sleep deprived when wake up time comes. So if your teen is particularly tired and particularly cranky in the morning, and you feel like as if you are walking on eggshells, well, there's a biological reason for that. So don't beat yourself up over it too much. I'm not saying give into it all the time, but at the same time, that's a reality in their lives. But I suppose the thing is to think, well, what triggers anxiety or fear in an anxious teen today may not be an issue tomorrow. And as parents, we're key observers of disappointments on a daily basis, or of challenges or of fears and anxiety. And there we just have to trust our own best judgment and work through the trial and the errors to find the best way to build up our teens. And again, I suppose it's important there who, to have a united approach in parenting. You know, whoever other half is, you know, one or other of you may have a gentler approach, the other might have a more disciplined approach, and that's no problem. But having sort of basic ground rules, which aren't negotiated with the teen, you know, that they're negotiated between both of you first, and then you may give your teenager a sense that they're part of the negotiating, but not really. And that's important because if there isn't a united approach in this, it's very hard to make it hang. You may say, well, that all sounds great, but what happens when I'm trying to get work done? You know, maybe you're at home these days, as we all are, and you're working from home and you're trying to parent, get homework done, get, you know, office work done, get them dinner on the table, do the laundry and various chores. And you're thinking, you know, do I have time for this teenage meltdown? You know, my teen is not the only priority in my family or my life right now. And that's when real life happens. And there are many times when we may weigh up the options and just give in because I just don't have time for this because we're human. And there's a certain element of picking your battles, you know, in this and looking at the big picture. But it's also good when we feel, God, I gave in there now and that wasn't really good, to reflect back on that experience and think, well, you know, best case scenario, what could I have done better? And the goal, which I think we need to keep at the forefront, is to make sure that the majority of the time, the decisions we make build leadership rather than enable their fears or their anxieties or their disappointments taking hold. But again, the aim here is not to beat oneself up for the moments when you get it wrong, because it's not 100% game here, as we know very well. And making empowering parental decisions, knowing that our teens are going to give us pushback, that's a very obvious thing to state. But sometimes when you're in the middle of a teenage meltdown or a pushback, you're thinking, am I the only person on this planet with a teenager like this? Am I the only person who gets this level of pushback? You're not. And thinking ahead in those situations where you're going to have to say something or challenge or contradict something with your team, well, think ahead because you might need to plan extra time there for that pushback. And in the beginning, it may seem useless to fight these battles, but we need to keep reminding ourselves that the goal is not immediate results. It's that teenager in front of you will be happy, confident, and mature and independent at the end of all of this. It does work, but it's hard work and it requires incredible patience. And that's really important to know at the outset, which you could probably all write a book on. But having this knowledge and mindset at the outset is a real game changer, and reminding each other of this, and giving each other breaks from it too is very important. I think it's important then to move on to the next, I suppose, second part of this podcast, which is really looking at just examples of what enabling, you might say, enabling fears or disappointments take hold of our teens, which is a type of parenting or behaviour we want to avoid, versus the opposite, which is building leadership. And as I talk through the examples here of enabling fears or anxiety, or you might say bad behaviour in our teens, we'll all recognise examples of ourselves and some of this. And I think that's it's, those bad choices maybe that we've made also come from a space of concern and wanting to do the best for our teens. So it's not helpful to beat oneself up over it, but instead thinking the change is possible in our parenting and our educating, and teens have a tremendous capacity to change too. And I think, again, it's always helpful to refer back to, the books on this. And again, the book of this podcast, as you probably noticed, is Teenage Brain by Frances Jensen. And she does make the point. She says that teenage brains have more synaptic connections than adult ones, which makes them highly impressionable. As they're building synapses and modifying them as they learn, they are primed to learn quickly and memorize things faster. And it's a period of huge opportunity. And I think that's important for us to remember that, that there is a lot they can still learn, and now is the time. And also the energy they need to learn is knowing that we're watching their backs. So in other words, no matter what they do, we'll be there for them, that they are deeply loved. And that's the energy, as I said, they need to follow through. So I suppose just to work to one or two, well, a couple of examples rather, of facilitating or enabling fears and anxiety in our teens. And that's the approach we're trying to avoid. So the first one is, do we shield or protect our teens from situations that may cause fear or disappointment or anxiety? And an example of this, the typical things are, your teen is afraid to attend a birthday party, to go out with friends, to visit a neighbour, to face a bad test result, that teacher hates me approach. So what do? You give in, you protect them from it. So you allow them to stay at home. You accept the fact that maybe, they don't work well with that teacher, and maybe you'll have a word with the teacher to parent teacher meeting or whatever it is, because it feels right. You're taking your teen side to allow them to stay in a safe place rather than face the challenge or the anxiety that they are experiencing. I suppose the second example is, do you step in to complete a difficult task for your teen? They have a project due for school and they're worried that it won't be perfect, so you complete the work for them, ensuring that it's done without a mistake. And you believe that completing the project for them removes some stress from their already bit challenging, anxiety-filled day, trying to work from home these days. Another example is, do you allow your teen not to take risks? In other words, your teen, for example, wants to audition for a school drama or the debating team or the basketball team or try to a new skill. Do you not let them because you worry that they may not make the team? They will be disappointed. So we're saving them from the disappointment, or they've too much on. And your team doesn't handle disappointment or failure well, so you remove the possibility that they won't succeed here, to avoid the possibility of their disappointment or failure. Do you give in to complaints or demands? Your team complains that she wants more time in technology, even though the time is up, and you let them stay on longer to avoid the argument, the anger, to get some peace or some work done that you need to get done. And of course, we all do this from time to time, but it's just, is it a norm, that consistently happens? Do you not allow your teen to experience discomfort? They're worried about appearing stupid or singing in front of a group of people in school, or I don't know, whatever it is, doing a school project on Teams these days. So do you let them stay home from school or avoid that Zoom meeting, whatever it is? Because you know or feel deeply that they get anxious or fearful in these situations, so you're allowing them to skip the performance because you want to shield them from that disappointment or from that challenge. Do you cover up your teen's errors? You know, the typical one. You know, your teen took another student's property home from school and you allow them to keep it rather than return it with an apology. Because you're worried they'll be embarrassed by their decision to take someone else's property, so you don't enforce an apology. You'd rather avoid the embarrassment of the situation yourself. No one's noticed so far, so let's pretend it didn't happen. A teen can also take another student's good name away. You know, they can spread rumours, they can build their own stories in their head, they can get support for those stories from their own peer group. And parents can naturally be partisan in these circumstances. It's normal. You're their dad, you're their mom. And so it's normal that the first reaction you'll have is, my daughter's right, or my daughter would never do such a thing. And it's really good for us to learn to double click on that natural response and ask questions, because no one's perfect, not even your daughter. And second guess ourselves. And experience shows there are always two sides to a story. And it's very good for our teens to learn that we're not partisan. You know, because we're teaching them how to exercise right judgment in these matters. Do you protect your teen from natural consequences? You know, your teen didn't remember to complete her homework, or she just didn't complete her homework and she is worried or fearful the teacher will be mad. So you email the teacher and take the blame for the incomplete homework. Do you remove any things that will lead to challenge, anxiety, fear or disappointment? And I suppose that the background to this is every teenager must learn to manage anxious situations independently. So if you're removing those moments of challenge or disappointment, you're encouraging avoidance. You're telling your teen that she's not capable of handling these situations and frankly that that's okay. And the more we do this, the more we build this false truth that becomes hardwired in our teens that says you're not able. And I think it's good as adults that we flash forward 1 year, 15 years, 20 years, what will this look like in the future when we're not there? What will the quality of their life be like? How will they deal with normal life's challenges? What will their relationships be like? What will their happiness? Will she be flourishing? So that's, I suppose, moving on then is to look at examples of how we might build leadership in our teens. And this is a family project, really. It's a project that works from the foundations up. That's why I like the word building leadership. Because there's no polyfiller here and there's no airbrushing exercises, because this is real life. This is hardcore. And building leadership in our teens takes a bit more planning. You know, we need to change our thought processes sometimes so this becomes a norm, and be prepared for the meltdowns and the resistance in the beginning, and get the strength that we need throughout the process here. So a couple of examples of what this might look like. Well, offering opportunities for gradual exposure to situations that may lead to disappointment, challenge, fear, anxiety. Your teen is worried about going places, you know. That's weird, Mom. Nobody does that, you know. Well, create a plan that you go with them somewhere, you know, that you challenge that. That's the social more they have. And then when you've done it with them, evaluate it with them. That wasn't so bad. We went here, we did that, you said that, you did the other, you put yourself out there. Another example is working together with your teen to complete a difficult task. And that varies depending on the teenager that we have, you know. And you know best, you know, sitting down together and coming up with a plan if you feel they're practicing avoidance. And the plan needs to include baby steps, but the focus is on getting them doing. Getting them thinking, giving them the support, plenty of time, but no overthinking here, because that's the paralysis that comes from giving into fear. We find our teens so often live in the imagination, and now more than ever with social media, and they're tech natives, so they live a lot in that world, which isn't real. So we're trying to help them to realise that the real world is actually a lot easier. At each step, encourage them to reflect on the fact that they did it. You know, look, you did that. Help them to see that it's their fear, it's their irrational fear that's holding them back. And they can overcome it. Nothing bad happened. Reality isn't the enemy, but fear is. Then creating experiences that offer small risks to your teen. For teens who worry about being alone, well, creating opportunities for your teen to go places on her own. You know, out in the dark with a parent, perhaps for 5 minutes or so. Taking public transport for some. Visiting an older person, you know, with an adult initially, because they learn how to do it. Teaching our teens how to stand firm. And we are standing firm when they complain or make demands. You know, remind your teen that you've expectations or you've ground rules for a reason, and gives them the reason why this is important and what this might look like if they follow through on it, but that you're not going to change your mind. But it needs to be something that we can rationalize. We need to give lots of reasons. Because what doesn't work well for teens is just ground rules which have no reason. And that doesn't mean that they accept the ground rules or accept the reasons, but they need to get the reasons all the same. Knowing how to compromise when a teen may be uncomfortable. And what does this mean? Well, if your teen is really struggling with singing in the choir, you know, she doesn't have the best voice, you know, we'll work out a plan where she maybe just takes part for the participation because it's good for the class, it's good for the morale, they need more people. You know, I'm always just so pleasantly surprised with all the tremendous talent in the Rosemont musicals, but also with those students who just muck in and do what they can do and maybe not do it as well as the lead, but they want to be part of it. So it's also giving them the experiences that we don't need to max out in everything, and that it's good just to be part of it. With also knowing ourselves that, well, if they're on the hockey team but they're consistently not able to hit the ball and they've been doing it for 5 years, well, it's okay if they want to draw a line because they're coming into their junior cert or they're leaving cert. And that's not a failure. They've experienced the uncomfortable situation and it wasn't overwhelming. And that's very good life experience, as we know. Helping our teens work through and accept their errors. So I suppose that's that example we gave earlier where your teen returns the book or the property that they took from school or somebody else with personal apology, or they apologize for that unkind word. They do need to learn to take responsibility for their own actions. They need to own them. That's part of growing into an adult. And I suppose we need to be able to help them to do that, because it's not easy. Giving them the language, explaining this is part of life, that they will come out the better person, that they will. That relationship that maybe was weakened by this is going to be stronger, and they need to do the right thing no matter how they feel about it. And that's a really important life experience. Then allowing our teens to experience natural consequences of their actions. You know, the homework that wasn't complete. You know, that you learn to apologize to the teacher. And that does require sometimes talking them through, oftentimes talking them through what that might look like. Teachers aren't ogres. They want the best for you. And then talking it through, well, how will you ask the teacher or apologize? What language might you use? And what's the next step? You know, the consequences of this could be you could get a lower grade, you could get a poor report, but that's not the end of the world. And as a parent or an educator, we're proud of her because she's done the right thing, which has been hard and probably more challenging. Also helping them to laugh at things. I don't mean make light of, you know, errors or things they do wrong, you know, when they've made the wrong judgment call, but also sharing one's stories from being a teenager can sometimes be helpful. But obviously think it through a bit. But it's good that they realise, look, you know, you're not going to die as a result of this. You will live to see another day. Teaching our teen to manage fears when they arise, you know, to understand what fear looks like. You know, to manage their thoughts and feelings. Because we're empowering them to go through life with confidence that they can handle whatever situations may arise. So things like facing your fears, because everybody has them. Balloon bursting exercise. What do I mean by that? Well, what's the worst thing that could happen here? You know, if you did this, or if you tried that, or if you took a risk here, or if you followed through on that, or if you overcame that fear. Fear won't go away. It'll just become less a feature of normal life. And in the next podcast, I want to look at the science behind overcoming fears, the adrenaline circuit, because I think that's hugely important as parents and educators, we understand that. And I'm sure many of you already do, but it's no harm to remind yourselves of that. And then just to finish, well, if we enable fear and anxiety, or if we try to take the disappointments or the challenges out of our teenagers' lives, we're helping our teens to avoid anxiety, which is making them fearful of life. Whereas building resilience, building leadership in our teens leads to fear and anxiety management, resilience, flexibility, all the tools they need to live a happy, flourishing life. And as adults, while we need to acknowledge what our teens find challenging or difficult, that's very important. And remembering the fact that what is difficult for them may seem frankly ridiculous to us, but we don't tell them that because that's not helpful. You know, telling a teen that's stupid or that's ridiculous or get over it isn't, it's just encouraging them to push it under the carpet. And then they might develop less healthy coping mechanisms. Whereas if we're able to help them step into that space themselves, accept whatever the challenges are, well, then we're helping them to develop good coping mechanisms. We're helping them to see reality is not the problem, but the problem is the fear, the false obstacles, the false, you might say, disappointments, which are largely based on imagination or maybe a bad experience, which we need to help them to work through and get over. Whereas their realities they've created for themselves and have let themselves become prisoner to if we don't help them out. And there's no doubt that parenting or educating is challenging, and parenting an anxious child is even harder. So in all of this, I'd encourage you to be very kind to yourself, knowing you're going to make mistakes, but you've all the tools and the knowledge to build leadership in your team. And just to finish with one or two nice quotes, well, I read one which said, "Behind every teen who believes in herself is a parent who believed first." And believing they can do it because you let them do it. You help them do it. We don't do it for them. It's a bit like riding a bike. You know, initially it's helping the little person get onto the bike, you know, managing the balance experience with the stabilizers, of course. And then they're off on their stabilizers and they're flying around, and that's the security they need. And then the stabilizers come off. So we need to be able to take the stabilizers off for our teens to experience the reality of their lives, and then they'll flourish. And two final quotes. One is from Sheryl Sandberg, which says, "You're not born with a fixed amount of resilience. Like a muscle, you can build it up, draw on it whenever you need it. In that process, you will figure out who you really are, and you just might become the best version of yourself." That's a helpful one to realize. And then Darwin, which I think is helpful, says, "It's not the strongest of the species that survive, nor the most intelligent, but the ones most resilient and responsive to change." So we're trying to help our teens to be resilient, to be responsive to change, to deal with the challenges and the disappointments in life, which are normal, sometimes are a bit extraordinary. But if they get the support, they get the reasons, and we give them all the best answers that we can and support them in that, well, then they will win through. Thank you for listening.